there, everybody. This is Armand DeMel with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM. Bringing you ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. In the studio with me, my assistant and co-producer here at BAI, Lisa Arnone. So much fun, huh, Lisa?
Yeah, I love talking to you, Armand.
And we're pulling up stuff. Lisa has has asked me a couple of questions a while back. She wanted some supervision, having been a therapist, as many people are, for quite a while. And she said, hey, let me learn a little about what you know. And I said, okay. And then came this thought that we were going to do it on air as well. So we've been presenting you a number of things called psychology for therapists. I mean, I really mean it. This is at the level that we would want to teach it to a therapist, not to the public. Because usually things are watered down for the public, you know. But here, at the highest level, I think, we talk about the nature of feelings. We talk about therapy. We talked about pathology. Today, I want to talk about something very important, which is kind of the thing that runs it all when we're not looking, and that's the unconscious. Yes, I want to talk about the unconscious. I want to talk about the unconscious and what effect it has on you. Now, here's an experiment for you today. I ask you for an email. This goes right specifically to what we're talking about. So the email would go to Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. And here's my question for the email. What does my voice mean to you? That's the whole question. What does my voice mean to you? You could take that question any way you want. You could say it reminds me of the terrorists who are trying to destroy us. It reminds me of marshmallows. You could say whatever you want to say. But if you would, this is an important survey. And we're going to work further with this. So that's the question. What does my voice mean to you? Some people said, as I told you, I've met many people who have heard my voice for 20 years and grew up with this voice somewhere in their life, but specifically my voice, not anybody else's voice. What does my voice mean to you? And that, however you want to answer that question. And then I'll bring you back the answers and I'll collate them and put them together. It's going to be very exciting, I promise. Because if you take anything that people have in common and you look at the responses to it, you learn a great deal. Why? Because there's a piece of us underneath here called the unconscious that's creating things. A young man came to me the other day and told me a story. He told me a story about this man who had scars in his face. His face was all scarred right and left. And he said, oh, this guy's got scars all over his face. And I said, and really, why? And he said, well, he says he was pulling into a parking spot, and there's another guy who wanted that spot. And so when he refused to give the other guy the parking spot, the other guy came out of his car with a knife and slashed his face. And that's why he has scars on his face. Now, I listened to that story. And, you know, of course, so many people would say, ooh, what a horrible thing. It doesn't make sense. I'm sorry. You don't get your face slashed that way. Nobody sits in a car in a parking space without doing anything. First of all, if somebody's threatening you that badly, get out of the parking space or run out of town. Right? So the whole thing doesn't make sense. But when something doesn't make sense, it usually means there's an embellishment we're missing, or this piece of the story we're missing, like the guy in the car, original guy had a gun. We never talked about that. We didn't talk about anything. We just talked about the reason his face was slashed because of the story. And maybe it never happened that way in the first place. Maybe it happened because of something else. Maybe a bottle of beer blew up. We don't know. Which brings me to the fact that wacky things happen to wacky people. Now, what does that mean? That means there are certain people who have bad luck in unusual ways. Like a tree falls down and smashes your window. Okay, that's within the realm, especially if you live in Greenwich, of the possibilities of things. But a safe falls out of the sky and falls down and kills the dog that you're walking with, that's wacky. No. Something is missing. Some information is missing. Wacky people do wacky things. They make choices that are strange. I knew a young man who said he went into the roughest part. He was in the Dominican Republic, and he went into the roughest town in the Dominican Republic. He went into this rough, rough town, and he was wearing bright white sneakers, brand new sneakers, in this part of town that were mostly gangs. He said, and as he was going through there, he said he was almost killed because people wanted his sneakers, but he was defended by his friend. He said, and this was the adventure of being in that town. There was something wrong with the story. You don't go walking into a town with bright white sneakers and guys that are... And I said, boy, you're drunk. And he said, oh, yeah, I was drunk, too. I was stoned. My friend was stoned. And the story got bigger and bigger because he was out of his mind. So out-of-their-mind people do out-of-their-mind things. So what is this out-of-your-mind? What is your mind? Is there a mind? That's what we're going to talk about today. I want you to figure a big melon. Melon? We were looking for a metaphor. We thought coconut, but it was too hard. I'm trying to give you a picture of your head. And in your head, there's a brain. Let's say that the part of the brain that you think about is the meaty part. You know, forget about the little organs inside. Forget about the little, you know, the little pieces that hang off the edges that they consider to be important. Forget about the other organs that are in there, just the brain itself. In this brain, there is a part of the brain that is used for activity, and then there's a part of the brain that is what we call houses the unconscious. What is the unconscious? The unconscious is a repository of all knowledge, instinctual and learned, that is not conscious. So if you have if you come from a heritage of people who have experience with something, see, with making breaking coconut shells, right? I ran into that recently, how to break a coconut shell. And if you come from a family of coconut shell breakers, when you pick up the hammer to hit the coconut shell, you're going to accidentally hit that coconut just perfectly because something inside you, some instinct, something came from the past, whooped up through your arms, down through your brain, and told you how to do it better than the other guy. The unconscious, a place where stuff sits that you're not aware of. It could be memories or it could be instincts. It could be preferences. Everything happens in this unconscious. It's huge. It seems inactive. It seems it's like you're not aware of it, mostly. Nor do you necessarily want to be aware of it, because if you were aware of your unconscious, Jesus, you'd be so busy all day long, your mind wouldn't stop. But it has all the memories from childhood. It has all the things that happened to you when you were a kid. You were telling me a story about a dog.
I was on the beach, and there was a little boy sitting on a beach blanket. He was probably under 2 years old, and he was eating a sandwich. And while he was sitting there eating the sandwich, a big dog came lumbering up, not threatening, very focused, came up to the child and took the sandwich away from him with his teeth. And the child was stunned for a moment and then started crying. And I said to you that I thought to myself, I wonder if that child's going to remember that. I wonder if that child's going to hate dogs.
Yeah, that child's going to be afraid of dogs. Right? What if you're a child or you're a baby and you get nipped by a dog, but you can't tell anybody because you're too young to communicate it and you don't show any wound? Will that affect you? I know a woman who's terrified of dogs. Terrified of dogs. I know someone who hates the smell of lilies. So if there's a lily in the room, she actually has to leave the room because of the smell. Now, and I say, what is the smell associated to? She says, death. So I said, see, you remember this in funeral parlors? And she said, no, I don't. Somewhere there's an unconscious. There must have been some kind of memory. Now, I'm willing to bet that somewhere as a kid, she had a feeling at a funeral. And the feeling was so intense, she decided to repress it. Now, that's a very interesting thing about the unconscious. You could take things and drive them to the unconscious and dump them there. It's like a parking lot. It's like a dump site. So let's say you have a feeling you don't like. For example, grief. Here's a woman. She goes to a funeral, and maybe it was her father's death or her uncle's death. And the lilies are all around. And so she hates the feeling, the grief, the loss, the pain she's feeling. So she drives over to the unconscious. She says, I'm going to dump this memory on the unconscious, the feelings. And then when she dumps the feelings there, she also has to dump the smell of the lilies. So whenever she smells lilies, the mind sends it says, lilies, lilies. I smell that lilies, and it sends a little tracer over to the unconscious, and the unconscious threatens to pull up those feelings. So rather than pull up those feelings, the person says, I will not allow myself to smell lilies because I don't want to deal with those feelings. The unconscious, such power.
So are you saying that the unconscious protects us from feelings?
The unconscious, you know, it doesn't have a good or a bad. It's not doing a thing. It's just there to be the reactive site. It's the reaction. It's the place from which you have the reaction, but there's not necessarily. I do think there's another part of our bodies, our minds, that is more responsible for choice. But it is just about repetition. The unconscious says there is a pain, and we don't want to feel the pain. Let's put it in the corner over here. Let's hide it over here. Every one of you who have ever felt yourself begin to feel something and then stop it, right? It's saying something unconscious is going on. Now, here's the problem with the unconscious. It's so big, it's so massive, that it determines practically everything. 90% of your choices are based on unconscious knowledge, and 10% is based on conscious knowledge. Isn't that huge? Think about that, Lisa.
It sounds overwhelming because it sounds like a lot of stuff that is going on in how I behave, how one behaves, is outside of my consciousness.
Yes. Yes, your preferences, the things you smell. I was telling a story about, imagine somebody brings you a cake and it's a vanilla cake. And a vanilla cake is nice. Well, the unconscious sends a little tracer into your unconscious, right? The brain sends a little tracer. So let's send out one of those neurons and it goes in there with vanilla. Let's follow vanilla, vanilla cake, vanilla cake, vanilla cake. And it finds, I got one. Here's a vanilla cake memory. And so that would be nice because vanilla cake may have meant mom made you vanilla cake and it made you feel good. But unfortunately, this was on your birthday, and on your birthday, one of your sisters was angry at you, and she took the vanilla cake and she threw it on the floor, and you cried like crazy, and you felt hatred for your sister, and you were deathly disappointed. So vanilla cake becomes associated with pain, frustration, and anger. So when you come all the way back, you say, I don't like vanilla cake. And you wonder, why doesn't somebody like vanilla cake? I guarantee you there are foods that someone you love or you likes or doesn't like for no good reason. for no good reason at all. You slimy things. What's so wrong with slimy things? What is it in the unconscious that interprets slimy things with bad? Smelly cheeses. Very, very, very smelly cheeses. Very smelly cheeses have a smell that is very close to the smell of death. There's a part of the brain that instinctually teaches us to avoid anything that smells of death. Because it's trying to tell us, don't go near it. If there's death over there, you could die. This is an instinct, right? So smelly cheese could easily have an association to some part of your brain, unless you've learned to overcome that, unless you've learned to taste the smelly cheeses and you like them. But the unconscious is so big, it's so huge, it's running everything. Every one of you, every situation you have has an association. That's what we do. In psychotherapy, one of the things you try to do is you talk about associations. You say to somebody, did you ever have that experience before? Now, this is a very, very big question. Did you ever feel like that before when you were a kid? By asking the question, the bridge between the conscious and the unconscious mind sometimes appears for a moment or two. And sometimes, if the person's feeling safe, they'll take the bridge and they'll walk over and they'll retrieve a memory. And they'll talk about it. And once they talk about that memory from the unconscious, it's no longer unconscious. Hopefully, we free our unconscious from the stuff that is repressed, pushed down, because we're not brave enough. Or we don't feel like paying attention to it.
I was wondering if the unconscious, if we also have associations to positive memories that we keep in the unconscious, and if we do, why would they be there and not in our consciousness?
Give me an example. You answer it. You know the answer.
An example would be, I imagine something to do with being a baby and being held.
Sure.
Why? So a certain smell will elicit that for me. But I don't have that as a memory. I mean, I guess I can't do anything with it. Could I do something with it if it soothes me, I guess.
Even going to sleep. You see, there is something inside us. There is good stuff that's in our memory bank, stuff that protects us, being cuddled, being held, the smell of baby powder. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did you get it when I just said that?
Mm-hmm.
Certain smells, certain odors, certain feelings. Feeling held by another human, contact. All of these things seem to have a residual in the unconscious, and there could be great pleasure. Our greatest pleasure could be in association with an unconscious pleasure. One wonders if part of the unconscious is an awareness of God. By God, I mean some universal consciousness that is so big that it's ecstatic. And maybe that's in the unconscious, because to have that conscious would mean you probably wouldn't function day to day. So maybe what you have there, back there as well, is not only the negative stuff, but the positive stuff. But you see, if we had all this stuff conscious, it would be like if you read every billboard that you ever passed, it's just too much information. You couldn't function day to day. You have to have what they call selective perception, which means you select that which you want to call to memory. But now, we have the conscious and we have the unconscious, and the conscious is what you're aware of all the time. But in the unconscious, you have repetitions, which are like habits, smells, visual things, choices of mates, which might have to do with genetics as well, tactile sensations, sounds that will frighten you or alert you or something like that. I wonder where music comes in the unconscious. I wonder what the unconscious association to music is. You know, there always is. Whenever I see a client and I find out their favorite music, strangely enough, I find two things. One thing is, they have two choices. The music that I used to play when I was with my father or my mother, and that was one music we listened to together, that becomes one kind of music that's a favorite. But the other music that's always a favorite is the music that I heard in my adolescence. Adolescent music in later life becomes a preferred old music you want to listen to. So if you were listening to Guns N' Roses, you know, oh, you love Guns N' Roses every time it comes around. If you were listening to Fleetwood Mac every time Fleetwood Mac is played, you kind of a party ahead, says, oh, yeah, those are good. That makes you feel good. Something about adolescence has a positive, growing, energetic association to it. So if the music is associated to the adolescent physiology and the building and that feeling of being so alive and so growing and so vibrant, the association becomes unconscious and you don't even know it. And you say, I just like that kind of music because it was better than the music we have now. We're going to be taking your calls and talking to you about this. As well as the unconscious, there's two other things. See, when I'm saying the unconscious, there are guys who believe there is no such thing as the unconscious. And I believe in a thing called the, I believe in a thing. Huh? I believe in, that means I pray to it? No. I perceive, or part of the structure that I use in my mind, is that there is an unconscious. So when somebody is moving towards me or saying something that looks odd to me, I say, ah, the unconscious is working. The unconscious is working. So if somebody says that they decided to drive to a spot and sit in a car where a guy comes out, some unconscious thing was going on here. When people are screaming at each other, rage always has a lot of unconscious in it. Because rage is in the present, and then it's calling up something from the very, very distant survival past. Screaming, rageful, is never appropriate. So if it's taking place, we're talking about unconscious stuff. Now, preconscious is when you take that bridge across to the conscious and you pull up something and you say, okay, let me think about this and let me bring it up here and let's talk about it. And so you talk about this with someone, and now you take something from the past and you bring it up to the present. I know a person who likes to create art based on stuff that she knew as a child. She takes pieces of things that she knew as a child and played with and turns them into sculptures. What a beautiful thing. She's absolutely bridging the entire unconscious every chance she can get. So we have the preconscious. And then we have another area, which I call the subconscious. Now, the subconscious, not to confuse you, the subconscious is when stuff comes out of the past and it's almost ready to blow up, but it's sitting right behind the furrow of your brow. You see, now your subconscious is the conscious about to come out, about to become conscious. So that's subconscious. That's right below there. So if you look at somebody who's looking at you and you know any minute now they're going to explode, you could assume the unconscious released some stuff. It's being held back and it's currently in the subconscious. That's my understanding of it. That's the way I use it when I talk about it. People can use different definitions. Repetitions, compulsions, phobias, panic, all of these things have in its past some peat in your unconscious brain. You have this beautiful, big, full space that we're not using. And so we could fit so much stuff in it. It's like it has, if you had a computer, you don't have gigabytes, you have terabytes. Well, in this case, T-E-R-R-O-R, terabytes is kind of very almost appropriate. You have terabytes of memory storage up there. You have so much space you could use. You could lop off a part of a person's brain and they could still function. Memory isn't necessarily affected if you have a brain tumor and you cut out a part of your brain. It's like, it's an incredible thing. We don't even know if it's got one spot for everything. it may have this kind of a little piece goes in many different directions, you know, like a hologram of existence. We don't really know it. We're beginning to learn it. We're imaging it. We're seeing it through imaging. We're seeing some remarkable, remarkable things through neuroimaging. But even that, we're learning, and we may be learning too much because we're making a lot out of the fact of the images. But there may be parts of the unconscious that you can't even image, things that we don't see.
But sometimes I wonder about the body storing memory.
Other parts of the body.
Yes.
Certainly makes sense. We have proven that there is a consciousness, a brain in the stomach. Do you know about this?
No.
Oh, it was really brilliant. People can look it up on the internet, the stomach's brain. That there is a part of our conscious brain that has one memory, and this has to do with serotonin, and where serotonin is released. And then they found that there's a different consciousness in the stomach, that it has its own little brain mechanism. I don't know enough about the details, but it's certainly worth people checking them out.
It certainly feels that way sometimes.
Doesn't it feel like your stomach has its own brain?
Mm-hmm.
And your mind's trying to talk to it and saying no, and it says yes. It says, I refuse to believe you. This is Armand DeMille with you. Our telephone number is 212-209-2950. We're going to take a short break. A short break. I'm going to bring you exquisite music. I like the word.
2900.
I'm sorry, 2900. You're right. Thank you, Michael. Unless you want to give a donation. No, it's still 2900. 212-209-2900. We're going to play for you something that came out of my unconscious and slipped into my conscious and then went over to my preconscious. And boy, when I listened to it, my heart just filled immediately because it's not that old, but just not very frequently played. So I'm going to put that on you so that you could get a chance to sit back and let all of the inner regions of your mind take over, which I hope you do. I hope you do. We'll take a little break, and then you just sit back and think about the unconscious and then call me. Also, do send me an email, and the email that I'm asking you for, what was the question I asked?
What are people's responses to your voice?
I want to make sure I phrased it exactly like that. What is your response to my voice, specifically? And we'll take that, and we're going to be using it as part of our work today and taking your telephone calls as well. We are with you today and next and tomorrow, Wednesday, and then the following week, the same thing.
Great. Thank you.
Isn't that a pretty thing? How long since you've heard that, Michael?
Good long time.
A good long time, right? It's like pure. It's like it's just like comes out of the church. John Lewis on piano. Milt Jackson on xylophone. Percy Heath on bass. Kenny Clark on drums. These four guys got together, and they were called the Modern Jazz Quartet. Just wonderful combination. Did they get each other's rhythm in place? Their unconscious became the beginning of what's called the now collective unconscious. Yes, a man named Carl Gustav Jung talked about a collective unconscious. He said, you know, the unconscious is not just a human unconscious, but there's an unconsciousness that kind of spans around. And it becomes a universal unconsciousness. An example of this is, a near example, is the 100th monkey syndrome. The 100th monkey syndrome, which I mentioned before, there's monkeys, they are working in Africa, and they are washing potatoes. They're eating potatoes. And they learn that when they eat a potato out of the ground, they got to spit out the dirt. And then all of a sudden, for no reason, somewhere like 20 years ago, or 30 years ago, a monkey discovers that if you wash the potato, it's better. So he grabs his potatoes and he runs down to the bay and he starts washing his potato and he eats it then. So this is now everybody's watching this and the observers are saying, look, he's washing his potato. He's got a new skill. Well, suddenly in Asia, they start washing their potatoes. And then in another part of the world, they're washing their potatoes. It didn't happen with the first monkey. It didn't happen with the second monkey. But when the 100th monkey was washing his potatoes, it seemed to become endemic. Now, how did that work? Did somebody call up and say, hey, Uncle Joe, monkey, you ever think of washing your potatoes? Somebody else said, no, the water changed. And the water became more amenable to potato washing. Or maybe there is something that is communicated through an unconsciousness that we don't know about. Terence McKenna, known for his work with mushrooms, believed that mushroom spores, or he believed that they were the eternal communication for the unconscious, communal unconscious. And here's what he would say. Because if we go up in space and we take samples from the nearest layer of space, from the Earth, from the atmosphere, the only thing we find up there that's up there is mushroom spores. So he believes that mushrooms connect the Earth to itself and to each other. And, of course, he grew magic mushrooms, psilocybin mushrooms, and therefore thought that taking journeys on mushrooms would bring you in touch with everything. Makes sense. You would think that. 212-209-2900 is our number here. So now comes this big question.
The big question. When you described subconscious right behind the brow is just about to burst into consciousness, what happens? Is that is there freedom? Is there relief? Is there understanding that takes you somewhere?
Or is it terror?
Or terror.
You see, that's the whole thing about the unconscious. When the unconscious becomes conscious, it could be any number of reactions, but they are enormous reactions. So, for example, let's say that you have a love sexual preference based on genetic stuff, which are smells that are sent into pheromones that are genetic choosing mechanisms that say if you're going to find a mate, he's got to smell this way because that would mean that he's got this perfect genes for this and perfect genes for that and perfect genes for that. And suddenly you meet this guy and all you want to do is have sex with him and you have sex with him and you feel in love. You feel so deeply in love. You felt like oh my God, did I find the right guy? Because nobody ever made me feel this way. Nobody ever smelled like this. Nobody else. I mean, that becomes what the experience is like. Now, that's the unconscious bleeding into the conscious in a very positive way. It's bringing you all that stuff. Let's say the guy gets up the next day and says, look, my wife is waiting for me, I got to go home, and never calls you again. Now, a doorway has been opened to the unconscious, and now with it comes some pain sent back into the unconscious, brought in there with a, with, as fast as it could get there, you know, they'd use a Shelby Cobra to drive it in. They zoom, get it in there right away, and then they pack it away in the unconscious, never to want to open that door again. And that woman said, ah, I don't want to take that chance again, ever. But now what happens is, if she has babies, even her babies inherit the danger. You see, part of we do what we do by becoming aware of who we are and what we do, by becoming aware, by becoming conscious of our unconscious, is we free our ancestors of having to carry the very same load that all our ancestors and their ancestors had to carry. I come from a family of screamers. It's just the nature of that part of my family. There's a part of my family is Italian, Sicilian, another part is French. The Sicilian Italian part, they yell a lot. But yelling was their way of avoiding contact. Talking softly was used for either seduction or for trying to convince somebody of something. But gentle getting down to the heart stuff was preserved for maybe somebody's dying and you want to talk to them that way. There was not very much gentle talking. The reason I wanted to learn to do it differently was because for my ancestors, for my sons to be different in the way they do it, and they are. They are. They're different. They learn different. So as you change in yourself, as you bring stuff to you change for the generations that follow, even if you don't have babies, for every person you touch. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is David.
Hello, David.
Hi, by the way, it's not the 100 monkey syndrome. It's a phenomenon, but it's really a myth. Primatologists have really discussed it at length, and it's a myth. And okay. The brain and the stomach, I think you're referring to the enteric brain.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, it's the enteric brain, and it's part of the nervous system. And serotonin is actually produced in that part of the brain as well.
So, David, what about you? You a happy guy?
What about me?
Are you happy?
Yeah, I am. I'm in school, and I'm really enjoying myself.
What are you studying?
Well, I haven't declared my major yet.
What do you think?
I'm really not sure because I'm enjoying it so much.
Enjoying what?
All the courses. Well, at my first year, I had to take a lot of general courses, and my second year last year, I really split myself between the liberal arts and the science, math. So this year I really want to focus.
Now, you're split between science and liberal arts, right?
I just enjoy it all.
I know you do. But let me ask you something about science and liberal arts, okay? Because we're talking about the subject that we're doing today. There's one feeling you have about the arts themselves. Are you artistic in any way, by the way? Do you paint? Do you draw? Do you sing?
Yes.
What do you do?
I draw, I paint, and last semester I worked on sculptures with found objects.
Okay, now you. Oh, sculptures with found objects, which is fascinating. But when you paint and you draw, that's one part of you, right? Then there's another part of you that's very scientific. And that's the other part of you, the other major. You see both of those as options for your future. You're going to choose between either science or liberal arts.
I thought I had to, but I have a wonderful professor who told me that we don't have to choose anymore, that there's room for, and there should be people who can do both.
Now, did you learn that from your family? You learned that from your professor. Did your family say that to you as well?
Well, my mother is an artist, but she is also somebody who used to design industrial equipment.
And one other question, David. What is your dad?
My father is a writer, but he's also he's a carpenter.
He's a carpenter. So he's more like a scientist. He's more mechanical.
But he earns his living with fictional as well as non-fictional writing, and he's worked with documentary filmmakers. So that's where he makes his living.
And how do you think what they do and your feeling towards them affected you and your choices?
Well, I was raised in a family. I have two sisters, and it was always fun. Our parents made things fun. Projects around the house were fun, and we just had a good time. So I think that's affected how I don't see learning as a dreadful thing. I don't understand people who cheat on their exams. I see the world as fun.
Amazing. And let me ask you this one question, one last question, because you sound like somebody who's grabbing the world by the gallions, and you're going to be living it completely as best you can. How about romance? How's that been to you so far?
I've only had one girlfriend. I'm still with her.
Uh-huh. And tell me the one thing about this girlfriend that's amazing.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
That's amazing.
She's brilliant.
So it's the intelligence that's really great.
No, I mean, she's brilliant. Her laugh shines. Her hair shines.
Oh, just like your whole family. Just like the best part of your family, where everybody laughed.
Yeah, and she is really smart, and she's very alive, and she's a gorgeous singing voice, which is not like my family, but...
David, thank you so much for calling in. Thank you for helping us.
You're welcome.
Clarify certain issues. Please stay with you. Have you listened to the WBAI radio? Have you listened to this program before, or is it just by chance you happened to listen today?
He left us.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you today?
Good.
I wanted to call in and talk about the exploration of the unconscious mind.
Sure.
The late Terrence McKinnon had a great way about going about it, I should say.
You knew Terrence.
Well, I didn't know him, but I've read a lot of his work and stuff like that and was really interested a lot of his theories.
So you've taken some of those journeys.
Yeah, well, I've read them over and I've kind of recreated them for myself, how they suited me better.
Uh-huh.
An interesting thing that I found out is that you can explore your unconscious, which is really, really difficult for a lot of people to do. The most easy way to do it without having to use other methods like, mushrooms or something like that. When you're in deep REM sleep, you really get a picture of what's going on in your unconscious mind. And I think that's something that everyone should try and pay attention to.
Well, how would they do that if they're in deep REM sleep?
Well, in your deep REM sleep, you have a dream, for instance. So a couple of nights ago, I have a good example. I had a dream that I was walking, and all of a sudden I realized in the bottom of my shoe there was a hole. And that was my whole dream, and I woke up.
As your whole dream.
And I was like, what could this hole in the bottom of my shoe, like, what kind of dream is that? So, I looked on the internet, did some research, and they said that mode of transportation for me may be, not in jeopardy, but there may be something wrong with my mode of transportation. Ironically enough, a couple of days before that, my check engine light on my car came on. So that the little light coming on signaled to to my brain, I should probably get this checked out. But since it's come on before, I kind of just put it back into the deep parts of my brain and said, I'll eventually get to it, and wasn't really conscious.
Well, what's your name?
My name's Rob.
Rob, that's pretty amazing that you're working at that level of consciousness, number one. Number two, glad that you were able to Terrence and I were old friends in Hawaii. And glad you've been able to use some of his work, because I think that he had some brilliant perceptions. So that brings me back to him. I appreciate that. And the way that you're looking at yourself is very interesting, but I must ask you this question. And I'm sorry, it's a question I asked David as well. How's your romance?
I have a great romance, but currently I have a girlfriend. But, you know, it's always magical. You know, you meet so many people. I'm still young, but old enough to have been through a couple of relationships, and you find out certain ways to go about certain things. And
so right now you're in the you. You're saying, I'm still young, and I'm still learning ways to go about things, and relationships are somewhat confusing to me, even though I am very fascinated by the workings of the human brain.
Yeah, and it's really such a magnificent thing. Back to Terrence, really quick. What really got me interested in, with Terrence is his work with DMT, or better known as dimethyltryptamine.
Sure.
And I did a lot of research on that just for my own personal enjoyment. And it is such a beautiful substance. And it was even more beautiful when I found out where it was produced, like within the pineal gland,
mm-hmm.
and things like that, and when it occurred.
Well, the psychedelic research is phenomenal, endless. I understand it. I wish I could talk more about it. Unfortunately, the audience doesn't relate to it as deeply as all that. But I thank you. I thank you for bringing your consciousness to us. Are you a fan of the radio program? Have you heard this show before?
I've recently become a fan. Within the last couple of months, I've tuned you guys in during my lunch break. I'm actually on one right now.
Great, great. When you get a chance, go to the archives and see if you can get this series, this very series I'm doing called Psychology for Therapists, from series one through now. Because a man like you would enjoy learning this stuff.
Yes, all right.
And thank you for being a messenger here on Earth. We need you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for being a messenger.
Thank you. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing good.
Fred, if you remember me, my name is Jabez. I talked to you about Daydream, remember, long few days, like a month ago.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I want to answer your question that you asked as the audience to do. You know, what I think of your voice is a trust. I mean, when I hear your voice, I think whatever you say, and I think I can trust you because you don't actually, let's say someone, you don't speak from your experience, but you tell the truth, whatever it is, even though you have a negative experience in that area, if that makes sense, you know.
So somewhere, my voice conveys to you that there's a certain safety that you have in knowing that I'm speaking to you, at least with my truth. You know, not necessarily the truth, but... Right, I'm not very covered up.
No, that's fine, but I feel secure and I feel I can trust. And another thing, you had a discussion. I want to do it very quickly because people are waiting on the line, I know. Is yes, actually, a long time ago, when I still have a social anxiety, and especially it came from a girl, because when I was in second grade or third grade, and a fourth grade, I guess, I wrote a letter to a girl. And it was funny, and I think the principal called my dad, and my dad was very upset. And from since then, actually, every time I go around the girls, I get so angry, and I think they're judging me because my dad was very upset about it, and he wanted to beat me up. And I've been thinking about that for the last 45 minutes, and at the bottom of my unconsciousness, that's what I can find, actually.
Wow, that's a terrific piece of information. That's terrific. Wait, before you go any further, you're right on the cusp of fixing this. Here's what the problem is. In order for you to delve into this a little further, you're going to have to face up to some of the reasons that you did get angry with your dad, and that is going to threaten you with a possible loss of your connection to him in the way that your unconscious wants to be connected. Doesn't mean a total loss in connection, but you're on the edge of making a major breakthrough in your own life. This is terrific information. So if you can't do it alone, get somebody to travel with you to take you through this piece. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
You're such a hero. That's fabulous.
Thank you. And, sir, I have a very good question. And I mean, I know that, you know, I get a response from around the people. It's not actually to be a look like a Brexit. I'm saying, why, even though, like, you know, you said conscious and subconscious, why you have the feeling that I'm not that good looking? And even though when I, sometimes I when I look at it, it's like, you know what, why is this so important? And why?
All right, so I'm going to try to tell you in a quick word. We have a word called the negative parental introject, which is an unconscious message that we set in the recess of our brain that indirectly is coming from some parental figure telling us something about ourselves that is not acceptable. And we take it and we actually believe it's ours. The reason we believe it's ours is because we want to keep the attachment to that very parent. It's very complicated, but it works. And I've seen it 100 times, and it's like you'll get past that as well.
What is your advice for me?
Your advice is to go into therapy right now, because you're ripe as you could imagine. That's okay. My advice. All right?
Thank you so much. Thank
sure. You. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Unfortunately, I have to leave you with Fantessa. So the question is, what does my voice... What's the question, Lisa? I got to have it exactly.
What does your voice... make people feel?
Or something like that. What is your reaction to my voice?
What is your reaction right now?
My voice. Send me that an email, armand@thepositivemind.com. Even if you're a friend of mine, we're collecting them and we're hoping to present it tomorrow, which will be a surprise. And for you, Michael, the church doors swing open.
Don't go anywhere. There's more programming ahead. The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille will be back tomorrow at 1 p.m. That's 1 p.m. The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.